everybody. Welcome to episode 642 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a spotlight on Batman Damned number 2 and The Batman Who Laughs number 1. It's also a 12 days of the Comic Source episode, so be sure to listen for the secret code word. You will need to retweet the tweet that announces this episode, as well as direct message me the secret code word for a chance to win a Batman Cataclysm trade paperback. And I think for this episode, we may pull a code word from that trade paperback. So let's dive right in. Batman Damned is written by Brian Azzarello. It has art by Lee Bermejo. The letters are by Jared K. Fletcher. There's a couple of different covers. There's a main cover by Lee Bermejo, which is absolutely amazing. It kind of reminds me of Rocky Horror Picture Show, in a way, Tim Curry's character, because it does seem to be a Joker, but kind of a transgender Joker. And then throughout the course of the story, we learn it's actually Harley Quinn. And I suppose if I'd looked a little closer, I would have seen the little star on her cheek and the little diamond and known earlier that it was Harley with Joker makeup on. But be that as it may, it's an incredibly good-looking cover. Very detailed, very lifelike, and really showcases the ability and skill of Lee Bermejo. He is just an absolutely stunning artist. His art is so good. There's also the variant cover by Jim Lee and Alex Sinclair, which showcases Batman. Also very detailed, very grim. It still suits the story that's being told here. This is a very visceral kind of street level, down and dirty story. With Bermejo's art, Gotham City has become a character in and of itself, as the settings do in some of the best comic stories that are told. Gotham is dirty and street and alive in its own way, and it seems to be infected almost with this supernatural chaos that's going on with the Joker and this general malaise that Batman seems to feel, as we saw in the first issue. He seems very overwhelmed, and despite the Joker's body being fished out of Gotham Harbor, doesn't believe the Joker's actually dead. So this issue starts off with a voiceover from John Constantine, and he's talking about the things that we all have in common, the things that hold us together. And the thing he feels like we have the most in common as humans, as people, is pain. It's a common experience that we all experience alone. Like, you can't feel another person's pain. We all know what pain is. We all feel it. And it's common ground in that way, but we all experience it alone, which leads to the proverb, which Constantine doesn't believe. But it's that proverb that what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. And Constantine considers that to be a joke. What doesn't kill us eats us alive. Body and soul is how he puts it. And as we turn to the second page to see Anne's soul, we get an incredible double page spread of the Gotham skyline by Bermejo. And it is so detailed and so lifelike and so real. It's just, again, stunning in its execution. And when you see pictures of Gotham like this, you see artwork of Gotham like this, you can literally smell the city. It seems to be so real. It seems to really come alive. And again, I can't imagine how long it took Lee to draw this. It's so, so well done. So much detail, you know, drawing each window, each building, the steam, the lights, the coloring, it's all just spectacular looking art. So on top of one of those buildings, Constantine and Batman are having a conversation. Not necessarily a pleasant one. You can tell that Batman really doesn't approve of him. And Constantine, for his part, seems to hold Batman in a little bit of contempt in a way. He feels like he knows so much more than Batman. He sees the world in a way that Batman doesn't, but there's still a level of respect there, despite that contempt. But they're watching the police down below who are busy, and Constantine saying that it won't do them any good. despite how busy they are, that, you know, they never do. The truth is they pity them and they carry guns, but they might as well carry mops, because all they ever do is try to clean up the mess that is Gotham City, right? And Constantine's talking about how the entire world's been made a mess by humans, basically, by the human race. And Batman says, "What we, Constantine? What we is it that's making this mess?" And Constantine says, "Ah, it's the royal we, right? If that makes you feel less worse, assuming, of course, you feel anything, that you still bother to feel anything, you try to hold yourself apart from everything." And Batman mentions that being psychoanalyzed is not something that he feels like putting up with. And Constantine's like, "Oh, did I strike a nerve? I guess you do feel something." And Batman says, "What I feel," and Constantine interrupts to say, "is responsible. You know, responsible for the ills of the world, responsible for Gotham." And Batman says, "No," to finish his thought. "What I feel is none of your business. The Joker's alive. And yeah, I realize we saw a corpse dragged from the river and we saw an altar desecrated, but there's more to this than meets the eye." So Constantine says, "All right, well, you know, the cavern," which is a nightclub. He's like, "There's a guy there who may be able to help, or maybe not. You know, he's kind of odd. It's hard to read his whims, but maybe we can go in and check it out." So they head that way, and we get a flashback to happier times at the Wayne Manor. Bruce as a child riding on a horse dressed up as the Lone Ranger. And as his father and mother exits the house, he says, "Hi, Dad, why aren't you dressed? We're supposed to," I'm assuming his dad was supposed to be Tonto. But his parents are fighting. His mom's saying, "You know, fine, walk out, you coward. I don't want you here." And the response from Thomas is, "Really? Well, how about don't be here when I get back?" And she says, "You know, you'll have this house over my dead body." His response is, "We'll see about that." And Thomas drives off with Bruce chasing after him saying, "Dad, we've got things to do. Mother wants you. I know she does. Dad, come back." And as we see Bruce turn, he has tears in his eyes. He's sniffling a little bit. And we get the voiceover of such a sad boy, and the sadness begets madness, right? Is he a mad little boy? Is he bad? Such a bad little boy. So many emotions to live with. Bruce walks inside. He's mad at his mother for forcing his father in the little boy, little Bruce's mind, forcing his father away, chasing him off. Bruce walks up behind his mother, pulls out his toy Lone Ranger pistol, holds it to the back of her head, and pulls the trigger. We realize it's a cap gun. So there's a big pop, which startles her mother, and she drops the picture that she's looking at of her and Thomas in happier times, and the glass shatters as she turns around and says, "Why, Bruce?" And Bruce is immediately taken aback. He feels sorry for what he's done, frightening his mother because her mascara is running. She looks sad. And Martha makes Bruce promise that he'll never point a gun at another person, no matter how desperate he is. And Bruce says, "I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you cry." Again, she implores him to promise. He says, "I promise. I promise. Will you stop crying?" So maybe one more reason why Batman doesn't use guns. His mother making him promise not to. So meanwhile, back in the present time, we see Batman approaching the cavern. And the voice over here, "Sad man, mad man, bad man, perhaps?" No. Batman's going to stay with Mad and let the anger smolder and catch and burn away any unnecessary thoughts. He's got to focus on the task at hand. And as he heads into the cavern, we see Deadman is following him. There are sounds of a mob being ripped into a rage. But actually, it's not quite a rage. They're actually screaming in exultation, which is much worse. They're screaming out blood because there is somebody on stage, J-Blood. And apparently he's some sort of rap star wearing a pentagram around his neck, plenty of rings and body piercings, including little horns over his eyes, sunglasses. And he's rapping. He's talking about blood. He's talking about spilling blood and the pit never being able to be filled. And he's J-Blood, and he's actually rapping about the demon Etrigan, and we wonder, is this a version of Jason Blood? perhaps, just not sure. It seems like it could be. It's certainly very much a different interpretation. So as Batman enters, the rapper Jay Blood sees him and comes down, gets right in front of Batman, asks who he's hiding from. Where's the black cat? What's he so scared of? Why does he wear a disguise? And Batman finally gets in his face and says, enough. I want the Joker. Mutual friends led me to believe you know where he is. And Jay Blood responds, here he ain't. And you ain't got no friends here. So all you got here is dead ends. And everyone in the crowd, or most of the crowd, all pull out guns, point them at Batman. And Batman says, you know, you give the word and they'll shoot, right? But think twice, because you're so close to me, they're going to hit you too. And if you don't want to die, and Batman, all right, Jay Blood responds, I won't, but they will. And the crowd turns their guns on each other. We see the demon approach and inhabit one of the bodies. Say, I got your back. Batman says, who? He says, it's me. Occult conspiracy, remember? It's cool. Listen, we got to get you out of the cellar. You can't be down here. And Jay Blood can tell that it's a dead man inhabiting this body and says, stay out of this, Brand. And Brand responds, this Satan wannabe is going to spout some mumbo jumbo, make you never want. He says, Jay Blood says, just get your junky ass above ground before I grab the soul that you inhabit. And dead man says, and what? And brandishes the gun. Batman knocks it out of his hand, saying, put that down. Deadman says, hey, man, easy. I'm just trying to help. And as he says that, there's a huge explosion. Everybody panics, goes running up out of the cavern. When they get up to the street, they see there are several buildings that are on fire due to the explosion. So as Batman's trying to determine what to do, we see the Enchantress that we saw last issue show up. She very much looks like the Enchantress from Suicide Squad. And she's saying, Tearless, I come to see what you now be. Bruce be dead, ever never mourned. My tearless tell me, what be left, does it belong to me? And he says, I know, and it seems like Batman's almost tearing up in a way. And he starts to say, I know. And the Enchantress finishes his sentence for him by saying, my secret, and vanishes in a puff of smoke. Some of the crowd that ran out of the cavern are saying, man, Batman, snap out of it. We're under attack. Is this some kind of terrorist thing? Batman says, no, you're safe. I'm here. And in the sky, we see the bat symbol. As Deadman says, forget safe, man. He's here too. And within that bat symbol in the sky, we see a Joker smile. So there are several people that seem trapped in one of the buildings. So Batman and Deadman, who's inhabiting this body, run inside to try to help. Deadman asking, what's the plan? Man, it's so hot. And as he runs in, he catches on fire. But this is the first time Deadman has been able to feel something in years. And he's actually sacrificing this guy's body. He's like, man, I'm on fire. You wouldn't believe how intense this feels. Man, pain, actual feeling. Batman ignores him and heads up to the second story, saying, listen up, if you're here, I need to know you're here, make some noise. And it seems that the people that were in the building have disappeared. Batman does see someone fleeing into a room, and when he gets there, he says, I'm here to save you. And this deranged person in a long coat with a hood says, save me, I'm not the one here who needs to be saved. I can see through the bat, I see your heart. I hear it cry, Judas, I know what you did. I know what you did. And again, there's that idea in the first issue of Batman Damned that Batman was the one that killed Joker. He was responsible for that Joker body that was in the river. But Batman's just not sure. He doesn't remember. He's not sure what happened. So his response to this madman is, do you? He says, tell me. Tell me. As Batman attacks him, and then we get a flashback. Too many years ago, apparently Martha Wayne had hired a private detective. Bruce goes to play a video game at this diner where they go to meet the detective. And the detective shows Martha what she paid him for. And as she looks at the photos, we don't see what is in the photos, but we do see her start to cry. And we see Bruce realizing that there's something going on, and maybe for the first time realizing and experiencing the empathy of a child who's realizing for the first time that the universe does not revolve around them. So meanwhile, back in the tenement that was burning, we see Batman's trapped by a falling timber from the roof. We see J-Blood there saying, "Man, you're pretty hardcore. I'll give you that, Bat. So from one to another, you're trapped. Same as us, but I'm actually going to pull you out of the fire." And Constantine is outside sitting on the curb calling J-Blood an old softy for pulling him out. And J-Blood says, "Man, I'm not feeling soft. I want him to suffer. This ain't out of pity. He's all yours." And Constantine says, "You're giving me a present?" And J-Blood says, "It's just another dark night in Gotham." So Batman's kind of recovering from the fire. His clothes are smoldering. His costume's smoldering. He says, "Constantine, there was a man in that fire. He had the answers I need." And Constantine says, "Oh, if I had a penny for every drop of blood shed due to the man in the fire's answers." And Batman says, "We can't let him die." He's like, "You know what? Your irrational need for control can wait. Because may I remind you what's in the sky?" And in the sky, we still see that Joker symbol, or the bat symbol rather, with the Joker smile in it. We see that Joker and some of his henchmen are on top of the police headquarters. They're the ones shining that symbol up in the sky, firing down at the police below. And Batman then shows up, takes out the other goons relatively easily, the henchmen relatively easily, but gets hit in the back of the head by a bat. And we see that this Joker is actually Harley Quinn. She's wearing her Harley Quinn costume, but she has the Joker's purple long overcoat on. She's painted her face to look like the Joker. She's dyed her hair green. And once Batman realizes she's there, he's able to knock her out pretty easily. Hits her several times to the point where she says, "Yes, hit me again. Please keep hitting me. I don't want to live. I can't without him." And the look on her face is just, again, like, it's so sad and scared, and you can tell that this version of Harley really did love the Joker, and she's just distraught and despondent that he's gone. And it's the art, again, by Bermejo is so amazing. The look of anger on Batman's face, the emotionality, these different emotions, sadness, fear, despondency, everything that we see there in Harley's face is so amazing, so well done by Bermejo. It's just so impactful. And that the look on that face of Harley really stops Batman from hitting her again. It really kind of shocks him. And he says, "Harley, it's over." And she says, "It is," as she reaches inside her coat, grabs a needle and punctures Batman in the neck with it, and says, "Not." So Batman starts hallucinating. Everything starts shaking. Harley screams in response to Batman's "no, no, no." She says, "No, no, no. That's all that ever comes out of you. Well, no more no's. No means yes," he would say, when he needed no to be yes. And we see Harley straddle Batman, start to take off her clothes. And I'm sure before the whole debacle with the Batwang that we probably saw a lot more of Harley in this picture. But what we do see is as she zips down her costume, she has a scar, which looks like an autopsy scar. So it's basically a big Y on her chest leading down to her belly. And she says, "You killed him, so you need to die a little death to haunt you." But Batman, despite being drugged, isn't quite as helpless as Harley seems to think. Grabs her by the throat, carries her over to the edge of the building toward the bat signal. And what's interesting is as he carries her over there and the issue comes to an end, we see a figure in the puddle on the roof that's being created by the rain that's falling. And in that puddle, we see somebody reaching for Batman from underneath. Is it Enchantress? Is it the Joker? Just not really sure, but clearly some kind of being from the other side. So this Batman Damned series continues to intrigue For me, by far and away, the best thing about it is the art by Lee Bermejo. I really think it's the best art, best work of Lee's career. It's absolutely stunning. Every panel is detailed and visceral and impactful. And it's just, there's so much emotionality. There's so much detail. There's so much storytelling going on with the way he zooms in on this image or that image or that part of the body. Like when Batman's got Harley picked up by the neck as he's taking her over toward the bat signal, there's one panel where we see Batman's boots and we see Harley's shoes and we realize that Harley's like 8 to 10 inches off the ground. Again, it's storytelling. It's bringing into emphasis just how far off the ground Harley is, how Batman's choking the life out of her. With just a, you know, it's so much told in just this panel where all we see is Batman's boot and Harley's boot. But again, the difference in height, the fact that Harley's not on the ground, it conveys the tension in the battle. It conveys Batman maybe crossing the line, how he's kind of overwhelmed by being drugged by Harley, how he's obsessed with finding out what happened to the Joker. All that with just a picture with a panel with two boots in it. So it's really great storytelling from Bermejo and from Azzarello, because, you know, Lee very well may have gotten direction from Brian on what to put in each panel. So many things like that. Harley licking Batman's face when she thinks he's been drugged and is helpless. I already talked about Harley's face when she's despondent and scared, and basically, we know she's luring Batman into a false sense of security. The background itself of Gotham City, I talked about that, how detailed it is, how Gotham's become a character itself. The coloring that Lee's using, you know, it's very similar to Batman Noel, if any of you have read that, or Lex Luthor or the Joker story. And, you know, no coincidence that Brian Azzarello did Joker and Luthor with Lee. They're a great team. They seem to bring the best out of each other, and the color work, it's muted colors. It's a lot of grays and blacks, browns, you know, darker oranges. There's some warmth there with the tones of when we see the fire and such, but it's not bright. This isn't a bright story. This isn't a, you know, traditional comic book color story where things are primary and it's a, you know, bright world of superheroes. This is dark. This is a tale of somebody being damned. And what does it mean for Batman himself to be damned? Did he kill the Joker? Did he not? What's going on with him? What, like, in what aspect is Azzarello exploring Batman? You know, we've had Brian on the show before. He's talked about what he finds most interesting about Batman is exploring the different aspects of him, what would make him do the things that he does. In a way, he's broken, and he's always going to be that little boy who lost his parents, and what that would do to somebody, and the choices he's made aren't necessarily healthy choices. And in a story like this, that's, you know, Black Label, out of continuity, you can explore those aspects. It works in a way that wouldn't necessarily work in the regular story. Putting Batman in a book with Constantine, in a way, the story that Bermejo and Azzarello are telling in this reality, in this version of the DC Universe, Constantine and Batman are in some ways different sides of the same coin. You know, Constantine seems to have contempt. He really tries to hold himself aloof and aloft from kind of the typical worries or the typical feelings of the common man, right? He understands so much more of the universe that he inhabits as far as magic and supernatural, and he's certainly willing to break some eggs to make an omelet. We've seen that many times. And this version of Batman, Constantine even calls him out. He's like, do you even feel anything anymore? Oh, I guess you do. You don't want to be psychoanalyzed. But he does seem, and maybe Constantine is just projecting, right? But they both are, in their own ways in this story, very self-involved, very self-centered, very much focused on the things that they want. And Constantine seems to have much more knowledge of what's going on, but hasn't deemed Batman worthy, I guess, to know. He hasn't given Batman straight answers. He seems to be using Batman, leading Batman around in a way, so that Batman will accomplish the things that Constantine wants him to accomplish. So does Constantine really want to get to the bottom of it? Does he have his own plans and machinations? It seems to me that that very much could be the case. There's only one more issue. It's only three issues. So I expect the next issue to be really fast-paced and go incredibly quickly if we're going to wrap up everything that's going on. So far it's been, I don't want to say slow-paced. The first issue, I think, was a little slower than this one. This one, the pace did pick up a little bit. It is a different kind of format, having these larger pages that, which I think are amazing, because it really, you really get to see Bermejo's art in this larger format. It's much better than a typical comic book size, so I like that. And I imagine this is going to be great in a hardcover as well. But only three issues, I'm just not sure, because usually if it were a story like this being told in a regular comic, if you went four issues, you could kind of have the story, the climax of the story, like part of the way, 75% of the way maybe through issue four, and then you'd have a few pages of kind of wrap up. I don't know if there's going to be room for that with only three issues. So I guess it all depends on how fast we come to a resolution. But it seems to me that we need two more issues. But again, I'm not writing it. These creators are at the top of their game. I'm sure they have a plan, and maybe we're gonna. I mean, I feel like we don't even know yet what's going on, let alone the resolution. Is Joker dead? What's going on with this Enchantress character? Who's the figure we see in the puddle at the end that's reaching up for Batman? What does Constantine know? What does he not know? What's Jason, or J. Blood, as he's called in here, what's his connection? What about Deadman? Is he going to show back up? I really am enjoying the story, and maybe that's why I want it to last longer, because there's so much more that could be fleshed out. Could be six issues, you know? We could really explore what's going on in this world. We could get a little bit more of Deadman. We could get a little bit more of this version of Jason Blood. Could get a little bit more of the Enchantress. But if it's only three issues, it's only three issues. I hope it wraps up well. I hope there's not too many plots that are left dangling. Perhaps Bermejo and Azzarello are hoping for a sequel, hoping that this will sell well enough they can do a Batman Damned 2. But I really am enjoying the story. It's even better than I expected. You know, when I heard Batman Damned and, you know, the Joker dead, and I expected it to be, okay, well, a Batman Constantine supernatural story. But it's been so much more than that. It's been so much more emotional, so much more, I don't want to say creepy, but it really does seem like Batman is suffering. You know, we have the scene in this issue where J-Blood pulls him out of the fire, saying he wants him to live because he wants him to keep suffering. And Batman really does, you know, to take a clue from the title, he really does seem damned. He does seem cursed in a way. How has he been cursed? Who has cursed him? What is the toll that all that is taking? This is a somewhat of a dark story. It's got some kind of biblical overtones of Batman doesn't necessarily seem like a hero in this story. He seems like a very much a tortured soul, a soul that is damned. And I love that Azzarello and Bermejo are getting to explore that. And again, I think it's worth exploring. And I think that's part of the reason, because it's so interesting, that I would want the story to last longer than three issues. But I really recommend it. Batman Damned number 2. Stunning, stunning. I really wish that the whole Batwang thing hadn't happened in the first issue, because I feel like it took away a lot from what otherwise should have been talk of what an incredible story and what incredible work this is from Bermejo and Azzarello. So Really, really, really recommend Batman Damned. Absolutely spectacular. If you weren't able to get your hands on a copy of the first issue because of the whole Bat-Wang thing, just ridiculous, you certainly can find it digitally. I do recommend it 100%. All right, let's move on to the next Bat title that I'm going to talk about. It is The Batman Who Laughs, number one, 6-issue miniseries. It is written by Scott Snyder. We have art by Jock, and the colors are by David Barron with letters by Sal Cipriano. I've gone on record as saying I'm not a big fan of The Batman Who Laughs. I don't care for the concept, really. You know, I've said many times I'm pretty much Jokered out at this point, and now you're talking about a Joker that's crossed with the Batman, or really a Batman that's crossed with the Joker, if you want to get technical. And I don't really care for the design either, like the whole metal band around his eyes with the spikes. Like, how does he see? It makes no sense, right? Not that I need to, you know, my comics to make sense. But all that being said, this was an enjoyable issue, and I'm going to keep reading it. I'm very curious to see what happens, and it's more about what happens with Batman, and The Batman Who Laughs is kind of an afterthought to me, although this issue does give the best explanation I've had yet for The Batman Who Laughs, and there is some perspective that's brought to the character that does make me appreciate him a little bit more. I always felt like the Nightmare Batman that came out of Metal, like, why is The Batman Who Laughs the most dangerous one, right? Like, you've got Batman crossed with Doomsday, you've got Batman crossed with Wonder Woman, Batman crossed with Green Lantern. Like, seems like those Batmen would be so much more powerful than The Batman Who Laughs, because again, the Joker, like, physically is not that strong, and it's part of the reason that I'm not a big fan of the Joker recently. Like, he's featured so prominently in the last decade of DC Comics. You can't go a month without Joker being in a comic or two. And honestly, I just feel like, man, it's time to have a break from the Joker, because I just don't feel like the Joker would be able to stand up to all these heroes. He doesn't, like, physically, he doesn't have, you know, the powers that a lot of the rest of them do. It doesn't seem like he would be as much of a threat in a way, but he's always a huge threat, and it just doesn't make that much sense to me, like, logically. But in this issue, in this story, we're getting a different perspective on the Joker. We're getting it explained in a different way. That kind of makes me realize that, yeah, I suppose the Joker is much more of a threat than I usually give him credit for. So anyway, the story starts off. It's narrated by Bruce Wayne. He's talking about happier times at the mansion, Wayne Manor, with Alfred and his mother and father. And then we shift to the current day, where Batman is following a truck that's hauling a couple of houses out of the city. It's a special truck that has these compression areas that allow things that weigh several tons to be placed on these flatbeds because of the weight and these cushioned areas. It gives these criminals a way to smuggle things out of the city. And he got a tip that these extreme load trucks were being used to carry contraband out of Gotham, and the contraband is apparently bodies of people who lived in Gotham that Batman was unable to protect. And these thieves think that they can smuggle the bodies out of Gotham, and it really angers Batman that these people he couldn't protect while they were alive, he's not able to protect when they're dead either. They're Gothamites, and they should be buried in Gotham. So Batman attacks with ferocity and is able to defeat the criminals. But what he doesn't expect is once he gets down into the compression chambers at the bottom of these extreme load flatbed trucks, when he finds the coffin, inside is the body, the corpse of Bruce Wayne. So later on at the morgue, he's disguised himself as the coroner and he's conducting the autopsy. And what him and Alfred discover or realize is that this is indeed a Bruce Wayne. He matches Bruce Wayne's DNA, but the scars only go up to a point. And what they realize is this version of Bruce Wayne at some point decided to retire as Batman. And that appears to have happened when Bane broke his back. He has all the scars, the same scars that Batman does. Our Batman, the Batman that's conducting the autopsy, is all the same scars up to that point where his back was broken by Bane. But after that, any of the more recent scars, he doesn't have. So based on that, based on the fact that this Bruce Wayne has echo fiber beneath his fingernails, which is used in green construction, Batman deduces that this Bruce Wayne likely retired as Batman and moved into civil projects, trying to improve the city through building things and kind of a more charitable path, I guess you'd say, charitable works and societal works, as opposed to being on the streets fighting criminals. He also realizes this Bruce Wayne was married because there's an indentation around his ring finger where a ring would have been, and also probably had a child because there's a tattoo that says May on it. And May is the name that our Bruce Wayne, would have suggested to Selina if they ever had a daughter, because it evokes a new start and a new beginning. He also noticed laugh lines around his eyes laugh lines around his face. And it seems that whatever life he built, he was happy. And all this leads our Bruce Wayne to the conclusion that it's him, he's back, I know it. And just based on those few words, Alfred immediately knows who he's talking about. It says, "You can't mean..." And we're left in suspense a little longer. And Bruce responds, "Yes, we know where we have to go. Take us there right now." The scene then shifts to Arkham Asylum. A couple of guards are patrolling. They get attacked by what appears to be Batman. But this is a Batman that's weighed down and armed with many guns. Shoots some guards, kills them. Attacks Mr. Freeze with some kind of I'm not sure if it's a flamethrower or a grenade launcher of some sort. Eventually comes to the cell that holds the Joker, opens it, and says, "Oh, bats, don't tell me you're here to actually kill me." And this version of Batman, loaded down with weapons, says no, and steps aside, and we see the Batman who laughs step up and says, "I am." So he apparently is there to kill the Joker. The Joker says, "Wait, we can make a deal. We can team up." And the Batman who laughs sinks a blade deep into Joker's skull, saying, "You know what? That's kind of you, but my answer is ha." So a little bit later at Gotham City Police headquarters, we see Batman showing Gordon a picture of the Batman who laughs. They're talking about the fact that he thought he was killing the Joker, but it turns out that it was a decoy. Batman's explaining that the Batman who laughs comes from a realm where all hope and fear exist in material form. And he's had moments of killing the Joker. And it's Batman's belief that the Joker's heart contains a singular supertoxin that, when released, turns whoever killed him into the next Joker. And so in the realm where the Batman who laughs comes from, Batman did succumb to that desire to kill the Joker and basically became the next Joker. So once Jim Gordon realizes that, he's like, "Oh my God." So the Batman who laughs is a guy that's the Joker in your body, basically. And Batman says, "No, he's not the Joker. He's Batman. He's me. The Joker has points to prove to me and to the world. But the Batman who laughs, he doesn't have to prove anything. He's just here to win. He wants to kill anything and everything that's a threat. And Gordon's trying to understand. He's like, wait, you're saying he's you? Like, how much of your life has he lived? And Batman says, all of it. He's led my life. He's me. He's had my training. He has my memories. But he's free of any kind of codes, moral, any kind of sense of justice. He's the living embodiment of the idea that, and Gordon responds with, Batman always wins. And that's a scary, scary, scary thought. And by far the best explanation that we've had of just why the Batman who laughs is so scary. Like, you know, we've thought before about all the different Nightmare Batman and their mashup of Batman and Doomsday, Batman and Green Lantern, Batman and Aquaman, Batman and Wonder Woman. And it's cool to think of those ideas and those mashups and how it can elevate Batman. You're giving Batman these different powers. But when you start thinking about Batman and Joker, and it's, again, it's not a complete mashup. It's taking Batman and everything that Batman is, this mortal person, this person without superpowers who's able to work on such a huge stage and be so impactful in the DC universe because of his mind, because of his training, because of what he's made himself into, always thinking three and four steps ahead, always the smartest person in the room, having the will and perseverance to push his body physically beyond what any normal human should be able to do. And then you infuse upon that the evil that is the Joker, like you imprint upon that the sadistic, psychotic insanity that is the Joker, and you start thinking about kind of the insanity that is Batman. Yeah, Batman always has to win, right? He's not willing to give up. He can be cold. He can be unfeeling. He can be calculating. And now you magnify that by such a, you know, exponentially, by an order of magnitude, because now you're talking about the intellect of the Joker, the cunning of the Joker, the evil that is the Joker. A Joker that will never give up. A Joker that is dedicated to the idea that the Batman always wins. Batman unleashed, basically. Batman without any compunctions for killing or destroying or watching universes die. So it's really a scary thought. And like I said earlier, it's the perfect explanation for just what makes the Batman who laughs so dangerous. So I do have some newfound respect for him. And I think I really would like him better if he just looked different. And basically, it's just that thing around his face. I just don't. I mean, I'm not like a big metal guy, you know, with the spikes and the leather and the chains, whatever. That look does nothing for me. But beyond that, and I know, you know, he can see in some way, some supernatural way or whatever. But I don't know. I just don't like beyond the logic of it. You know, because it is comics and whatever. I just don't care aesthetically for the way that it looks. But anyway, Batman goes on to say, yeah, he's an apex predator. He conquered and killed world after world in his dimension. And he's here for something. And he brought other Batman with him. And this other Batman that he brought with him who killed everyone at Arkham, nearly killed Mr. Freeze, the one they're calling the Grim Knight. Which, as Scott Snyder described him at San Diego Comic-Con this year, like Batman mashed up with the Punisher in a way. Like a Batman who, at that moment when Joe Chill killed his parents, obtained the gun from Joe Chill and used the gun to shoot Joe Chill and immediately avenge his parents. And from that moment loved guns. That's who this Grim Knight is. So Batman speculates that the Batman who laughs must have brought him over before the last battle and he's kept him in hiding. But what's the deal with this dead Bruce Wayne in the morgue? There's got to be a plan, but our Batman just can't see it yet. And he realizes that he needs help. So at the time of the attack, the Joker that was in Arkham, we know, was a decoy. And he had used different names and different identities. as he'd been impersonating different people on his way to being that decoy, Batman describes him as one of Joker's slapstick men. But what's interesting is each time he changed his name, he changed it to words that meant happiness in other languages. But each one of them had, each one of those names had an added letter, and the added letters spell Sang, which is an old Gotham comedy club expression for having the best night of your career, right? Like, you did so great that it's over. You can die now. The fat lady can sing. And Batman takes that to be a clue that what would be the happiest moment of the Joker's life? Where would that take place? Where is Batman supposed to meet the Joker? The Joker must know that his decoy's dead, and Batman needs to find him to team up, because the only way Batman believes that he'll be able to defeat the Batman who laughs is by teaming up with the Joker. And then it hits him. Where would the Joker want to be? Where would he be most happiest to finally triumph? Well, the Batcave, of course. So he heads to the Batcave. He has Alfred open the waterways. Alfred hesitates, saying anyone traveling those waterways will be able to come right in. Batman says, "I said do it." And as soon as he does, we see the Joker does indeed surface in the pond that's in the Batcave. And Batman says, "You'll be safe here, Joker." And the Joker says, but I don't want to be safe, old friend. And you don't either. And the Joker pulls out a gun. And Batman's like, "What are you doing, Joker? We need to work together." And when Joker pulls the trigger, the gun actually fires backwards into the Joker's heart. And Batman's kind of surprised, like, "A trick gun? Why did you shoot yourself? Alfred, help me. This blood's arterial. Joker, stay with me. Why did you do that?" And the Joker says, "This is the only way to beat him. You've got to become him." And that's when Batman realizes he was right all along. The Joker does have some singular super toxin in his heart. And who's ever there when the Joker dies is going to become the next Batman. And sure enough, as Alfred walks closer to Batman, he says, "He's gone, sir. Why are you smiling like that? What's wrong?" And we see that our Batman has become a Joker himself. And he says, "I know that Alfred is calling to me, but all I can hear is laughter." So it's a great start to this 6-issue series. Does this mean that we have another Batman who laughs? Because we have another Batman who's become Joker. And I do like the look of it. Like, his eyes are red. His skin is white. He's kind of drooling. He clearly still Batman, and obviously doesn't have a costume on with leather and chains or whatever. But right away, I'm like, okay, yeah, the Batman laughs. Can we get rid of the thing across? Just give him the red eyes. Get rid of the... But I love this idea of now we're basically going to have two Batmen who laugh going after each other. But what are the differences going to be? That's what's most intriguing to me. I mean, beyond the whole seeing the end of this issue, not what I expected to have happen. In a way, our Batman has lost to the Joker as well, because he's been infected with the Joker serum. And then, is the Joker really dead? He's released the toxin from his heart, but does this mean that our Joker is dead? Will he be brought back in some way? I don't know. But again, the surprise and the twist at the end totally blew me away. Incredible job by Scott Snyder. But the thing that has me most intrigued, okay, so what are going to be the differences? They're from different dimensions. You know, the Batman who laughs, the original Batman who laughs, is from the dark multiverse, and everything dark that goes along with coming from there obviously is going to have effects on him. Will our Batman be able to perhaps maintain a little bit more of himself as he's been infected by this super Joker venom? Or is it going to be that now you've got two apex predators and they really want to just destroy each other? And how will Batman, our Batman, be able to go back to being Batman? How will he cure himself of the Joker venom? Could he perhaps have some immunity that was built up over time? Or, yeah, it just, there's so much there. There's so much to the story. But as I said, the thing that intrigues me the most is exploring the differences between these two Batmen who laugh. What are the differences going to be, and how will our Batman defeat the other Batman who laughs? and the Grim Knight for that matter. So really, really great job. The art by Jock, I'm not a big fan of Jock's style. It's a little too sketchy for my taste. I prefer my art to be a little cleaner. That being said, he is a great storyteller. And I think the strength of Jock's art beyond the transitions from panel to panel is his sense of layouts within the panel. There are several times where he moves the camera around that are and gives us iconic pages. The scene where the Batman Who Laughs is standing in the door of Joker's cell. And we're kind of looking at him, not dead on, but kind of off to one side, looking up at him from kind of a worm's eye view, is really, really well done. So art-wise, it does suit the story. It's just not my favorite kind of art. The colors by David Barron, you know, it's hard to find a colorist who's as talented as David. He evokes so much mood, and he really seems to grasp the tone and the mood that comic writers are going for, and it seems almost effortless in the way that he colors stories that then enhance that mood or kind of flesh that mood out more, make that mood or tone more obvious. You know, oftentimes I'll compare colors in a comic book or a sequential story to the soundtrack of a movie. Not necessarily the songs with lyrics, but more of the background music, which helps set the tone and get you kind of excited. Like, think about a horror movie where, you know, you get the creepy music and it starts kind of ramping up. So you know, it ramps up the tension in a way, and you know there's something coming based on the music reaching a crescendo or a certain part of the music, the way that it plays out. And it's the same way with the coloring that David Barron gives us here. It's so well done and really helps a lot of the panels to be even more impactful than they probably would be if it were in black and white. So really, really great start. I read The Batman Who Laughs, number one, because I knew it would be an important book for the DC Universe going forward. It's Scott Snyder. The Batman Who Laughs is really popular. Batman is probably the most popular DC character. So despite the fact Batman's not my favorite character, and I really don't care for the Joker these days. I've kind of had my Joker overload, oversatiated with the Joker. I did want to read it and give everyone my opinion because I knew, number one, a lot of you were really looking forward to it. And also a lot of you are probably curious what my opinion on it would be. So that's why I went ahead and covered it, despite the fact that I was kind of indifferent about reading it. But what I will say is after reading the first issue, even if I wasn't doing a podcast, I would definitely be picking up the rest of the issues because even though I'm not a fan of the Joker, I'm a huge fan of Scott Snyder. And this is excellent storytelling, super compelling. Right away, Snyder set up an interesting dynamic with the original Batman Who Laughs and this new Batman Who Laughs that's been created from what I'll call our Batman. So just incredible job by the entire creative team. Really, really well done. The variant cover by Greg Capullo, I'll give a shout out to as well, which was amazing. Really, really great job by Jock and Scott and David Barron. The letters by Sal Cipriano were done well. Also, great job. I can't wait for issue two. Learn more about the Dark Knight and especially learn more about the battle that's about to happen between these two different Batmen Who Laugh. So really, really great job. I can't recommend it highly enough. And I'm curious to know what other longtime Batman fans think about this story. So let me real quickly give you the secret code word for the 12 days of the comic source. Let's go with Cataclysm, since we're giving away the Batman Cataclysm trade paperback. Again, just retweet the tweet that announces this episode. DM me the secret code word of Cataclysm to win the trade paperback, volume one of Cataclysm from Batman, the start of the No Man Lands story arc from quite a few years ago in the Batman universe. So once again, I want to thank everybody for listening. As always, you can find more information about the 12 days of the comic source in the show notes. There's a link to the webpage that has all the rules. So if you are curious about how to win, what the prizes are, what else is up for grabs, you can click on that link, go to that page, and it's got everything listed there for all the giveaways. So please be sure to tell all your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use to listen to your podcasts. The ratings really help us with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.